Welcome to the Kleptocracy podcast, hosted by the Kleptocracy Initiative. And every few weeks, we're going to be delving into the issue of kleptocracy around the world, how it affects us, and what Western policymakers can do about it. This week, there has been dramatic news from Ukraine, where e-declarations have been brought in by the Ukrainian government to tackle corruption. And our first guest is Daria Kalinyuk from the Anti-Corruption Action Centre. Daria, could you begin by explaining to us a bit of the background of this law? How long has it been in the works? What are the objectives of it? Was there some inspiration from laws around the world?
Well, actually, this law has a long story. It was voted 2 years ago, and it was part of our post-revolutionary requirements to Ukrainian government. So right after the Revolution of Dignity, which happened in Ukraine in 2013-2014, right after Yanukovych, the former kleptocratic president, ran away from the country, our organization, our NGO, jointly with other civil society organizations, started to build up strong anti-corruption legislative framework. And part of this legislative framework was to set up laws which open up information about who owns what in Ukraine. So simply in Ukraine, access to information, access to state registries, access to public finances, access to asset declarations, this is a powerful tool for average citizens to control their authorities and to control their governmental institutions. So back in 2014, in October 2014, we voted this law in the parliament because there was a huge pressure of international community from outside of Ukraine and huge pressure from inside from Ukraine to get this law on board. And since that, we were working hard to get these provisions implemented. There were a lot of obstacles and opposition from Ukrainian government, from Ukrainian senior leaders, who realized the potential threat this e-declaration system can give to them. They realized that they will actually have first time during independence declare what they really own and how damaging this could be to their reputation. And they realized that there actually could be responsibility, including criminal liability for non-declaring or for declaring false statements. And before, in the last weeks before the system was launched, we were witnessing tremendous pressure and opposition to this system. However, because of the joint efforts and joint messages coming from international community and civil society in Ukraine, we were able to pass these obstacles and to achieve results which we can witness now. Unprecedented amount of very interesting, to say it very light, information about assets of Ukrainian senior officials.
So what inspiration was there for the law? Are there laws elsewhere that the document drew upon? Are there laws in other post-Soviet or transition states that are comparable? How does it compare to, say, laws in Georgia or in Poland or in Russia?
In Russia, there is nothing which could be compared to this law. But we looked a lot into the Romanian experience. Romania is a new Eastern European, a new European Union country, and Romania had very common problems a few years ago. So it had something like post-Soviet legacy. And they said they created anti-corruption investigative institution, and they introduced the law for very extensive e-declarations for a very extensive amount of items officials have to declare. So we were inspired by their example. We also included into the law some provisions which reflect Ukrainian peculiarities. So at the end, we've received in Ukraine a very unique system, and very unique system, which I don't think exists in any other country in the world.
Are there any loopholes in the legislation? How do we know these declarations are truthful, and what are the penalties for breaking it?
Well, there might be some loopholes. So far, we see that one of such kind of loopholes could be a requirement to declare beneficial ownership of companies, but lack of requirement to declare beneficial ownership of real estate. So, for example, if I am a senior official and I am a beneficial owner of company registered in, let's say, Belize, but which manages expensive Mason in Spain, for example, I don't have to declare this villa in Spain. I have just to declare beneficial ownership of the company. Another loophole in this system could be lack of mechanisms to control the huge amount of hard cash declared by Ukrainian officials. So it is first time during independence when there is such a requirement to declare hard cash. For Western democracies, it's very unique to keep store in the house hundreds, thousands of dollars, and sometimes even millions of dollars. But Ukrainian officials do that. They don't trust banking sector, and they literally store money under their pillows. But to check whether they reported in their declarations exact amount of their cash they store, it's almost impossible, because you don't have with what to compare. A person could claim that he or she received this expensive, I don't know, gift 20 years ago, and you can't check that. Theoretically, there could be explored possibilities to check that through tax administration and to compare amount of declared hard cash with the amount of taxes paid in the recent years, but I'm not sure whether it will work.
So is there a feeling that these declarations are truthful? And what are the consequences if activists and civil society show that some of these declarations are falsified?
Well, I feel that these declarations are the most truthful declarations which were submitted by Ukrainian officials during the last decades. So there was a requirement to submit declarations before, but there was no responsibility what at all for false statements, and there was very low responsibility for non-declaring. And there was no requirement to declare a lot of items which now have to be declared. Now, one of the reasons officials declared, I believe, very closely to real things which they have is that there is criminal liability for false statements. There is criminal liability for illicit enrichment. There is criminal liability for non-declaring. And there is new anti-corruption investigative agency with mandate to investigate these crimes. So we have kind of two instruments. We have asset declarations, and we have agency which can investigate these asset declarations, and which differs a lot from other law enforcement agencies because it is really free from political interference. Unlike other agencies we have in Ukraine, this National Anti-Corruption Bureau, it has strong guarantees of its independence, which were also part of our post-revolutionary achievements, and it was also part of the requirements of the IMF, of the EU to Ukraine, to set up such kind of independent investigative bureau. So we have agency to punish, and we have a very a good law which requires to declare literally everything you owe.
And what kind of punishments are foreseen in the law? Is it fines or criminal sentences, prison terms?
It depends on who violated the law, and it depends on how much is the amount of discrepancy between e-declaration submitted and real lifestyle. So if there is a low level official and amount of discrepancy is less than $25,000, there could be administrative liability, and it means simply fine. But if it is a senior state official, like a prosecutor, judge, minister, deputy minister, member of parliament, then, and the discrepancy is more than $25,000, then criminal liability could happen. Of course, National Anti-Corruption Bureau has to prove intent that a person knew about their asset but didn't declare them intentionally. It's not easy to prove, but it is possible. So for this kind of violation, there could be punishment starting from fine and ending up to 2 years in prison.
So, what are the political consequences of the e-declaration, and what kind of social change are you seeing around you as Ukrainians know the true extent of the wealth of some of their politicians for the first time?
Well, Ukrainians before had a feeling that Ukrainian, especially senior officials, they have very luxurious assets. However, now it is confirmed by the documents. And now it's, as I already told, now it is an eye-opening exercise for many people in Ukraine. Now they understand what a rich country Ukraine is. But now we understand that this wealth belongs mainly to senior state officials. So the question is where this wealth is coming from. And considering that in Ukraine it's a very hard economic situation and majority of population simply and majority of population has hard time even earning funds to feed themselves. It's very disgusting, I would say. Many people in Ukraine, they volunteer in the army. Many people in Ukraine donate to children with heart diseases, like with oncology. Many people in Ukraine support very a lot of charity initiatives because state fails to deliver what state has to do. However, while this part of progressive Ukraine, middle class of Ukraine, and more poor Ukraine is protecting, is replacing state and delivering basic services which state has to deliver. There is another part of Ukraine which is represented by very senior officials who have to do reforms, but instead of doing reforms and providing the services to Ukrainians, they are taking care of their enormous wealth.
What have been the most shocking e-declarations?
Many of them are shocking. Just today, I posted information about wealth of head of Ukrainian Financial Intelligence Unit. This is agency which has secret information about all suspicious banking transactions in Ukraine. This agency has power to block wire transfer, and this agency has power to recover funds stolen and laundered to abroad. The head of this agency has five luxurious cars, including 3 Mercedes-Benz, Maserati. He has a 500 square meters house in a very luxurious suburbs where Ukrainian president also lives. He has 500,000 US dollars in cash, in hard cash, and 200,000 euros in hard cash. So it's written in his declaration that his wife is successful businesswoman, that she literally got 10 million hryvnia profit during 2015. However, I tend not to believe that this is his wife who is producing all this wealth. I tend to believe that he received all that wealth simply because of his position. So, and this is just one of many, many, many examples. One of Ukrainian MPs joked. He's admitted in his asset declaration that he has 1 trillion hryvnias. 1 trillion hryvnias, I don't know even how to calculate that, but these are billions of hryvnias. So, and he then explained that he joked. Well, for such kind of joke, I think there could be punishment like going to prison. And it's intentionally false statements provided, submitted in the asset declarations. This also reflects the treatment of Ukrainian members of the parliament, specifically this member of the parliament, to this system. They simply disrespect laws and they disrespect the right of society in Ukraine to know actually how much wealth the representatives of people of Ukraine, members of the parliament, have.
And now our last question, but in a sense our most important one, which is, what more could the European Union and the United States do to help both this law and further laws down the line be properly enforced? What else do anti-corruption activists in Ukraine need in terms of support from the West?
Yeah, first of all, we have to protect everything which was achieved. This is already a lot. And to be honest, we didn't expect 2.5 years ago when we started to fight for these changes that we will end up with such a success. Second, in terms of anti-corruption legislative framework, we need two more things. We need a right for new anti-corruption investigative agency to wiretap independently. Now they cannot wiretap without support of Ukrainian security service, which is under the political influence of the president of Ukraine. So there is a huge risk that a lot of information about investigations of NABU, this investigative agency, will be leaked. And we have already proofs how that happened. There is a requirement of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, to get this problem resolved. There is already a law, draft law, in the agenda of the parliament. So simply, members of the parliament have to vote for that law. The second thing which we are lacking in this anti-corruption legislative framework is anti-corruption court. We have to realize that without decision of the court, without decision of the judge, any corrupt official will go to jail. And anything from such corrupt official will be confiscated. So disregarding the fact that we have very good anti-corruption investigative agency and disregarding the fact that we have anti-corruption prosecutors, which were selected through very competitive, transparent process, we are still lacking anti-corruption court with competitively selected, truly independent anti-corruption judges. Once we have the law on anti-corruption court, and once we will set up the anti-corruption court, we will have the closed system, which will guarantee punishment for corruption. And actually, IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the EU, they have to put these two conditions, these two requirements to via independent wiretapping for NABU and requirement to set up anti-corruption court with special procedure of selection of judges as their conditions for the further support or the financial support for Ukraine.
Great. That's it. Well, thank you so much. That was really, really brilliant.
You're welcome.